The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
Gonna buy me a long white robe, yes, Lord, to help me home. I'm gonna buy me a long white robe, yes, Lord, to get me home. And when I get my heavenly gown and I lay my burden down, I'm gonna get me a long white robe to get me home. This is Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates Gordon Lightfoot's music song by song, a proud member of the FM Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and with me today is a fellow Lightfoot fan coming to us from Saco, Maine, Neil Cody. Neil, thanks for being on the show with me today.
Mike, it's a pleasure. I've been listening to your other podcasts, and in fact, I think I listened to six of them yesterday, and I probably would have listened to more of them, but there was a PBS special on amphetamines in the military that I just had to watch, so...
Well, I'm glad that if I had to get trumped, it was going to be by something like that. So how did you first get into Gordon's music?
Well, like a lot of Americans, I was in, you know, if you could read my mind, and that came out when I was in the eighth grade, only it seemed to represent a disconnect between me and older people as for such topics as length of hair.
And sure. You
know, and it's funny. As a student, I oftentimes had trouble finding a theme in poems and short stories, but I could grasp the meaning of songs, and a lot of very profound songs came out around that time. I mean, there was Neil Diamond wrote Shiloh When I Was Young, I Used to Call Your Name, When No One Else Would Come, Shiloh, You Always Came, Come Today. The Kinks sang Ape Man, and that appealed to me. And this rather obscure group called the Mike Curb Congregation came out with a song called Burning Bridges that was in that great movie, Kelly's Heroes. All the burning bridges that are falling after me. And those songs really seemed to resonate with me, as did one by a man named, I think his name was Keith Barber, Echo Park, about an old lonely man. And that reminded me of my grandfather, who also lost his son. I mean, poignant lyrics put to music did have a hold on me, and no one did it better than Gordon Lightfoot. And that especially came true a few years later when I was in high school and had my heart broken multiple times.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I know the feeling. I think a lot of us had to go through that. But yeah, I mean, as you said, he's kind of been this part of the soundtrack to our lives, and you picked up on him as a child, as did I. So it's a great way to have lived, to have been able to reflect on this song really hit me at this point in my life, and this song was impactful in another circumstance. Did you ever get a chance to see Lightfoot in concert?
13 times between,
oh, yeah,
between 1987 in New Hampshire and 2017 in Portland, Maine, where I reviewed the show and chatted with him afterward. He was very gracious. The two or three most memorable shows, one of them was at Massey Hall in Toronto in November 1988. And that was like seeing the Pope at the Vatican.
Good analogy.
And I also like the fact that Pee Wee Charles was still playing pedal steel.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the second and the last time that I saw Gordon with Pee Wee in the band. I will say, though, that around this time, the East of Midnight album was still being promoted, and that was not my favorite album. The adult contemporary and the overproduction, it just seemed to get away from what Gord did best. And then 2 years later, when I saw him in Tampa, Florida, with one of my multiple exes, that was a great show, and, you know, my lady at the time was in a red skirt and a white blouse, and I remember having my arm around her during Railroad Trilogy, and it was a great show. But then, I think it was the summer of 2010, when I went to a show in Binghamton, New York, and what made that show so memorable was afterward, some friends and I were in the Holiday Inn Tavern, and I recognized Barry Keane and Terry Clemens come into the bar. I had met Barry a few years earlier, very nice man, and as a struggling guitarist, I wanted to meet Terry, so I went up to Terry, and I just said, Terry, I'd just like to say hello to you. I've really admired your work for so long, and he was like my best friend. He was, Terry was like that. I mean, he was very, very gracious, and then he comes up to the bar, sits down with my friends and I, buys us all around, and then we're talking about the band and Bob Dylan and the Rolling Stones and Kathy Evelyn Smith, who he said, she is not an evil woman. She had some problems, as we all did. Let's not be judgmental about her. And then when Rick Haynes and Mike Heffernan came into the bar, Terry invites us over to that table and he introduces us as his friends. And that was just so gracious of him. And so there were about four or five of my friends, along with Terry, Rick, and Mike, we closed the place down and a lot of off-the-record conversations. Rick Haynes can be an honorary old bastard, but a very amusing one, and he had a particular charm. Mike was gracious, too. Terry was the most fun. It was just a very memorable evening. I was saddened a couple years later when he passed away, and his alcoholism at that point was alluded to, and including by Gordon, in an obit that ran in one of the Toronto newspapers. And Nick Jennings did describe it in his biography that came out a few years ago. A very good biography, very well balanced.
Yeah, I happen to have a copy of it right here. And I use it as a desk reference for all things Lightfoot. And oddly enough, I'm going to be making reference to that book in a second or two. But it does sound like you were pretty much welcomed into the fraternity of Lightfoot so instantly. And I think that says a lot about your approachability and also about the way that the band members carried themselves. I would love to have been there, tagging along saying, hey, me too, me too. So you're very lucky in that regard. So we wanted to talk about Rich Man's Spiritual, which is the first song that most of the world heard by Gordon Lightfoot, because it was the very first track on his very first record, recorded sometime between 64 and 66. Why did you want to talk about it in particular today? I have my own reasons for liking it, but I'd like to hear yours.
Well, I'm at the stage of my life where the afterlife is a concern. I was raised a Christian, although I probably know Lightfoot's work better than I know scripture. I know the story of the rich man who did not share what he had with the poor man, and the rich man goes to hell, and he is begging Abraham to intervene by telling the poor man, dip your finger into water, it'll cool my tongue. And yeah. Abraham is saying, pal, you're out of luck. You had your chances to make good, but it's too late now. In our earlier correspondence, you informed me of another parable involving a rich man, which I really wasn't aware of, the one where Jesus tells the rich man, sell what you have now, which actually Woody Guthrie had a song about that too. I learned something new every day, because that song where Woody Guthrie sang, they laid poor Jesus in his grave, it mentions what Jesus had told to that rich man. There's also a bit of a similarity between Rich Man's Spiritual and Stairway to Heaven. There's a lady who's sure all that glitters is gold, and she's buying a stairway to heaven. Well, she might be a rich woman, but like that rich man, that's not enough. And that also brings to mind another one of my favorite singer-songwriters, who was the late Mississippi John Hurt.
Yeah, good one.
Of all the singers who had interpreted You Gotta Walk That Lonesome Valley, I think Mississippi John Hurt did the best version of it. And that lyric, you got to walk that lonesome valley, you got to walk it by yourself. ain't no one's going to walk it for you. Maybe Gordon was channeling his inner Mississippi John Hurt, as almost everyone did, in writing about a more naive man saying, you know, I'm going to wear these golden slippers, I'm going to buy a pair of wings, I'm going to have this angel lobbying for my cause. Well, when you're walking the valley of the shadow of death, I mean, you are walking it alone, as Mississippi John Hurt and the Carter family and others reminded. And I think that's what Gordon is reminding too, even though he's taking the perspective of a naive man, which he might have also done decades later in another obscure song called Forgive Me, Lord, That I Have Sinned, and I Have Sinned Again. It kind of reminds me of a song by Iris DeMent. I want to do right, but I don't want to do right now. Let me enjoy my hedonism a little bit longer.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a universal conflict. Yeah. The spiritual aspect of it is kind of conducive to what I wanted to say. There is a message to it, but it's not an overly heavy message. You don't feel depressed by listening to this song, but you are struck by the naivete of this guy, that if he has just had a contact with Christ, as it does in the 10th chapter of the Gospel according to Mark, where he's told, sell all you have, give to the poor, you'll have treasures in heaven, and then come follow me. I got to think about it. This is the next day, and the rich young ruler is saying, well, I'm going to get to heaven, and this is the way I'm going to do it. And of course, it's the complete opposite of what Jesus had told him to do. Now, you mentioned some parallels with the Led Zeppelin song, with the Mississippi John Hurt song. Do you have any personal anecdotes about when the song really hit home and you thought, okay, this is narrating Neil's life right now? Or have you ever been lucky enough to think that you could buy all those possessions?
Well, I found out about the song when I bought this compilation CD, which probably was about 20, 25 years ago. I had never heard the song before, but upon hearing it, I was thinking, this is every bit as profound as Blowing in the Wind, or Where Have All the Flowers Gone, or all those timeless odes of the 60s by Bob Dylan or Dave Van Ronk or Tom Paxton or Joan Baez. And only this song did not get the widespread recognition. It should have. And I was surprised when I was looking at YouTube today, there's video of Lightfoot singing that song while accompanied by others, although not its own band. And there are a couple other recordings, which I hadn't been aware of, and including one by the great Ronnie Hawkins.
Yes, and we're going to talk about that. And there was one other cover that I found, but you're right. I mean, this is probably an unfairly obscure song from an album that didn't get a whole lot of airplay, although obviously it was his freshman effort, so he was learning as he went. As it says, he caught on gradually. You're listening to Carefree Highway Revisited. We'll be right back after a word from a podcast partner or two. Hey, I just wanted to take a second to tell you about my latest podcast discovery. Fire Breathing Kittens is an actual play one-shot podcast that plays various tabletop role-playing games with a season-long plot. Because there's a beginning and an end to each week's story, you can start at any episode. Yeah, you won't miss a thing. Every week has a different combination of four from the same rotating cast of people. Join fire-breathing kittens as they solve detective mysteries, attempt comedic banter, and enjoy friendship. That's Fire-Breathing Kittens podcast. Check it out.
1 minute, you're a teacher preparing for the new school year. The next, you're transported to a fantastical realm shrouded in forgotten magic. The creatures around you think you're a long-vanished mage. You have no technology. You have no memory of how you got here, and no idea how to get home. All you have is misplaced magic. Haladar, the Last Surveyor, is the new fantasy novel by acclaimed author Rob Perrier, Available now on Amazon.com and RobPerrier.com.
Let me ask you this. Is this a song that you could listen to at any time doing anything, or is there a particular setting where you'd think this is where I would really enjoy listening to this the most?
When I listen to Lightfoot, either when I'm driving or when I'm at home and I can sit back in my easy chair and just absorb the lyric and the melodies, I don't play Lightfoot if I'm cleaning house. I find that Lightfoot's music just commands all your attention. I mean, I could put on the Stones if I were doing something else, but there's nothing really profound about Jumpin' Jack Flash or Satisfaction, but there's always something profound and poignant about a Lightfoot song.
You know, that is beautifully well said. And I think for me, I really have to focus on the artists that I care about. And the Stones are not one of them, so that I could play that while I'm cleaning house or folding laundry or just doing something very mundane. And it would be, okay, it's a nice background noise. But if Lightfoot or CSN or somebody comes on like that, I'm just thinking to myself, I have to drop everything. And I have to really focus in with my ears and my heart at what it is they're saying. That said, I think driving would probably be the ultimate way I would be listening to this, because most of his music is conducive to driving, but this one is upbeat enough so that it would also enhance the whole driving experience. So I think I would probably put this on a road mix, and I'm driving from the Bay Area down to Disneyland next month, so maybe I'll have that as part of my soundtrack for the trip.
Well, the artists who I always listen to while driving, aside from Lightfoot, another one who was from your part of the world, and that was Kate Wolfe.
Late, great Kate Wolfe.
I put her on an equal pedestal with Lightfoot. No one could just squeeze your heart the way Kate could. And Nina Gerber, she was to Kate what Terry Clemens or Red Shea was to Lightfoot, who could so enhance a song with whether it was on mandolin or lead guitar or whatever. I just love Kate Wolfe. Someone else, he might be obscure but well-known in the folk community, and that was the late Bill Staines. He lived in New Hampshire, and he songs like Roseville Fair, All God's Critters Got a Place in the Choir. He cut his teeth listening to Lightfoot and others at the Club 47 in Boston, where Tom Rush also cut his teeth. I wish I had that kind of musical ability.
We can't all have that same kind of gift, and I certainly don't. But if it wasn't for Lightfoot, I know I wouldn't have ever taken up the guitar. There were other artists that I listened to that were just as important, but there was no one more important than Lightfoot. In the book, Jennings never mentions the song by name, or if he does, he doesn't mention it in the index. And I can't find anything about how the song got written in any of my online sources. And I've looked in the liner notes of the Gordon Lightfoot songbook, and that song is not on it.
Yeah, there's another book that preceded Nick Jennings. Have you ever read David Bedini's Writing Gordon Lightfoot?
I have a copy of it, yeah.
I very much enjoyed that.
It is a delightful read. Unfortunately, Bonini doesn't mention anything about the song in his book either. Yeah. So I think we probably, at least for today's purposes, we're probably going to have to write that off as we don't know how it got written. But we know what the spirit of it is, and that's what we can talk about now as we talk about the lyrics.
If we can bring the song to greater attention, we'll really serve a purpose, I think, because it's a song that I'd like for other people to hear.
Yeah, and I think on the notes to this podcast, I think I'll put a YouTube link to the song, because I think more people need to listen to it. And it is available on YouTube, and of course it's available on the Lightfoot album, the exclamation point album, and it's on at least one of the collections that are out of Lightfoot's work, although it's not out on Gord's Gold or Gord's Gold 2, as far as I know. Let's start talking about the lyrics a little bit. I did some research with the help of my friend Kevin Hester. Shout out to you, Kevin, in Iowa, about what the different objects meant in the song. And gonna buy me a long white robe. The long white robe usually symbolizes purity and righteousness, and it's a common image in religious texts, Judeo-Christian and otherwise, with the idea of I've been freed from sin. I have a stainless appearance. There is no blemish on my gown. And this guy apparently thinks he can buy sinlessness. And the fact of the matter is that money won't buy you a clean conscience, and it certainly can't buy you earthly perfection. When I get my heavenly gown and I lay my burden down, and I wonder, what kind of burden is this guy talking about? Is that just poetic license, or do you think he might have another burden that he is alluding to?
That line, too, reminds me of another Mississippi John Hurt song where about laying his burden down. But I think that, to me, laying your burden down means repenting. But you're not going to repent by wearing a gown or slippers or false wings. You lay your burden down by repenting. You know, to a Catholic, it might be going to confession. To a Protestant, it might be just saying deep prayers. To a Muslim, it might be something else. But, you know, we all fall short of the glory of God. So, you know, there's a spiritual burden we have, which is our sins. But then there's the earthly burdens we have, too, which is just trying to support ourselves and those we love. In that case, it could be both burdens.
Although you think about it, if this guy is that rich, then he probably doesn't have to worry about his earthly concerns. He's got enough wealth to be happy and enough so that he thinks he can do this. It does make you wonder about the burden. But as you said, the only way you can lay down the burden of sin is to repent and stop sinning. And given the fact that this guy is trying to buy his way into heaven, he's not doing very well, at least looking at it from a Judeo-Christian perspective. I'm going to buy me two golden slippers, yes, Lord, to walk me home. And it's symbolic of walking on a spiritual path. This guy doesn't want to do the work. He doesn't want to give up his riches. He doesn't want to change his ways. He just wants to buy the object that represents something. I think about modern day wrestling fans or modern day UFC fans who will buy a championship belt that is a replica of the one that their heroes, you know, the Hulk Hogan's and the Ric Flair's wearing, so that they can say, hey, I'm a champion, rather than doing the training, the working out, getting in shape and actually going into the ring and fighting somebody else. It's merchandising. This is not spirituality. It's merchandising. And when I get my slippers of gold, then the Lord will have my soul, which is interesting to me because in the Christian tradition, which Gordon was raised in, the Lord wants your soul above everything and anything else. So he's saying, then the Lord will have my soul only when I've made this purchase, which I think is just almost silly considering what it's really about. You have any thoughts on that verse?
I never thought of it through the UFC or the wrestling standpoint, but you do make a good point. When I heard the part about the slippers, that's really when I thought about the valley of the shadow of death.
Yeah.
Walking through it. And that is where Mississippi John Hurt, you got to walk that lonesome valley, came in. When our time comes, we're walking through it alone. And I think we all have the same distance to cover, whether it's prorated at all for where we're from. But I think we all have to check the same boxes before we get into heaven, at least on the first ballot. So.
Nice way of putting it, the first ballot. There is a school of thought that we all die alone, that there's nobody who's going to be there, even if they're holding our hands. And then there's also the perspective of, even if I have the golden slippers and the white robe, I'm still walking through the lonesome valley or the valley of the shadow of death or whatever metaphor you want to use. You may have the accoutrements, but you're still going to have to go through that valley. And on the other side could be heaven in the songwriter's mind, or we haven't the vaguest idea what. I agree with that idea that keep the Mississippi John Hurt reference, because that's working here. I'm going to buy me two wings of silver, yes, Lord, to fly me home. Well, angels have wings, at least the angels that we think of in the West, they have wings. Silver is a precious metal, so it's obviously going to be expensive. And when I get my silvery wings, then an angel choir will sing. And I thought, this is the funniest part of the song, because when I buy this, then an angel choir is going to be congratulating him for buying something that can't be bought. And as usual, I'm reading too much into this, but I just thought he is actually looking for praise for what he's done. What do you think?
Well, he's singing it from the perspective of someone who just takes too much for granted and someone who hasn't done any serious introspective spiritual thinking. I think he wrote the song when he was, what, in his mid-20s? Probably was 24, 25 when he wrote the song. But I think it's obvious that he was not that naive man himself. But he recognized the insincerity, because one thing everyone that has ever said about Lightfoot is he was on the level. He was not a phony, and he was not really pretentious. He was a fairly humble man. He was not a Mick Jagger.
Oh, no. He was down to earth. He was not someone who demanded to be treated a certain way. He was not a diva. In the masculine sense, he cared about doing well. He cared about success, because musicians do want to be able to feed yourself. And of course, he died extremely wealthy, but it wasn't a cosmetic job, I guess is what I'm saying. He didn't go into this just to make money, because it would have changed the quality of the work that was being done. And then we come to my favorite part. I'm going to buy me a poor man's trouble, yes, Lord, to help me home. Because this is the most ironic part of the song. These are troubles nobody wants. Okay, nobody wants to have the troubles of a poor person or a homeless person or somebody who's just living hand to mouth or can't feed themselves. Nobody wants that. And a poor man would gladly give up some of those problems for some other kind of trouble, like the kind of trouble that a rich man would have. Oh, shall I wear stripes or checks? Oh, the problems of my attire, that kind of thing. And I guess the narrator is kind of trying to get around the idea that it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter heaven. So again, he's trying to break the rules. He's taking the idea, blessed are the poor, which is a paraphrase of what Christ said in the Sermon on the Mount. And he's saying, well, then I'm going to buy myself into being poor. I don't know how you do that, but there it is. Any thoughts?
I like your observation about that part of the song. I don't believe it's the last verse of the song, but it does lead up to the part about it. Now that I've bought me a poor man's trouble, now the angels will really welcome me. And it's a reminder for the rest of us, maybe Donald Trump too, that there's no buying of a poor man's trouble. You got to have some empathy for those who have less than you. Greed is not good, and you just got to have the empathy, or otherwise you're the rich man dressed in purple.
Yeah.
You know, who winds up trying to intervene with Abraham, you know, have the poor guy dip his finger in water. What good that would do, I don't know.
Not very much in the short run, I'll tell you that. To quote our former governor, Jerry Brown, in a slightly different context, he said once, there is no such thing as a billion-dollar populist. He was talking about Ross Perot, but I think the message still holds, that you can't buy your way into being just a regular Joe.
You're listening to Carefree Highway Revisited. We'll be right back after a word from a podcast partner or two.
In 1942, when the world needed a hero to fight the forces of evil, a woman had the courage to step forward. Her name was Helen Meeker. Her adventures took her across the United States and behind the lines of both the European and Pacific fronts. President Franklin Roosevelt trusted her judgment. Adolf Hitler put a price on her head. And in the face of overwhelming odds, She battled through everything that was thrown at her, dodged death countless times, and challenged the most diabolical figures in history. The star of more than 20 novels, Helen Meeker proved her grit and determination time and time again. And now the Long Highway Players bring the book series to life on the airways. These exciting dramas will place you in the middle of the action, immerse you in riveting drama, plunge you into unimagined intrigue, and confound you with dark mysteries, while giving you the opportunity to live adventures in a time when the fate of the world hung in the balance. Enjoy the exploits of Helen Meeker and follow author Ace Collins's In the President's Service series on That's Not Canon Podcast Network.
I'm Steph Garcia.
And I'm Mike Messner.
We are the co-hosts of Musical Murders, the true crime podcast that meets at the dissonant intersection of music and death.
From rock legends who lived fast and met tragic ends, to the shocking cases of musicians who crossed a deadly line, we uncover the stories behind the ledger lines.
What drove these artists to darkness, or made them targets of it? Was it the price of fame, the pressures of the spotlight, or something darker?
Each episode takes you deep into the lives, mysteries, and crimes that shocked the world and left their mark on music history.
Tune in, if you dare, as we expose the shadowy side of the stage. Because sometimes the most chilling stories aren't found in the lyrics, but in the lives behind them.
Musical Murders, available on the Sinister Somnolence YouTube channel. I'm gonna find me a smiling angel, yes, Lord, to leave me home. And I think it's interesting that he's saying, I'm going to buy. And then the final verse, he said, I'm going to find me a smiling angel, not hire one, not buy one, because that would imply slavery. And then he takes me by the hand. I know the Lord will understand. And I'm thinking, understand what? Understand that you've tried to go against the grain, that you've tried to go the opposite way of what Jesus was telling you. I thought that was just hysterically funny.
I'm just reminded now of another song about the afterlife that Gore did, which is in the 4-CD box set, and that's Heaven Don't Deserve Me.
Yeah. After we get done today, you're going to need to tell me about that box set, because okay. Now I'm thinking my birthday's coming up, so I'm ask the birthday fairy for that. Yeah. Well, the song originally appeared on the Lightfoot album in 1966. It was recorded between 64 and 66, so we can assume that at the very latest, he wrote the song while he was making the album, which would have made him no older than 27, still mid to late 20s, still a young man. The album did not chart. The song was not released as a single, although there were two singles released from that album, but this wasn't one of them. I don't want to say that the first album was commercially a flop, but it certainly didn't make an enormous impact, even in Canada, and probably not at all in the States. I don't know what the sales of it were, but we could find out pretty easily. What's your favorite musical part of the song? We've talked about the lyrics, but for the actual music, what you're actually hearing outside of the words, what's your favorite part of it, Neil?
Well, Gord was primarily a rhythm guitarist who could finger pick. And I like the rhythmic guitar to that song, which is spiced up by the lead player. Was it Red Shea or?
It was David Ree. And you would have thought that it would have been John Stockfish and Red Shea who have been playing on the record. And my guess is that United Artists was kind of hedging its bets, and they didn't want to have anybody that they weren't really familiar with. So they brought in these two studio musicians. So that's why you have David Ree on the second guitar and then Bill Lee on bass and Gordon, and that's it. There's nobody else who plays on that record.
It doesn't need any more instrumentation. And when Gord has layered his music, usually it's been done in a very tasteful fashion, like in If You Could Read My Mind and Song for a Winter's Night with the Strings.
Yeah.
Rich Man's Spiritual, it really did not need anything more than the very basics, a couple guitars and a bass guitar. It just did not need keyboards or anything else.
No, it didn't. And I'm not sure if it was a stand-up bass or a bass guitar that was being played. But I can tell you that my favorite one was David Reed's second guitar. I thought it added a really nice element to it to keep us interested beyond just the 12-string, which I think Gordon was playing on this song. I need to listen back to it and see if it was a 12-string or a 6-string. But anyway, that was done very, very tastefully. And you're right. The song didn't need any more. Gordon, I think, plays piano on a couple of the songs on the record, but it doesn't need anything else. You don't need an organ. You don't need drummer. You don't need percussion. You don't need any more stringed instruments. You certainly don't need any horns. So you've got everything you need. And it was consistent with what was going on in the folk tradition in the mid to late 60s, even with Dylan. You know, Lightfoot never played this song in concert that I can find. From the very beginning, he just never played it, even to promote the record. You've already mentioned the fact it didn't show up on this box set, but he didn't play it in concert either. Do you think it was because he felt like it was too juvenile, or why do you think he left it out of his sets?
Well, I wish he was still around so we could ask him, but that song is anything but juvenile. It is a gem. And again, it ranks with Blowing in the Wind or Where Have All the Flowers Gone. It brings forth a universal truth. It's a very subjective decision, you know, what you play live or what goes into a greatest hits analogy, but I certainly would have included that one. You know, there is that YouTube of a very old Lightfoot singing that song with kind of rough accompaniment, which is on YouTube, but we don't know anything more about it.
And I kind of wish that Gordon had been more deliberate about the end of his career, in the same way that Don Williams said, okay, I'm going to have a retirement tour and that's it. You know, I'm not going to be going on anymore. Elton John has just finished this enormously long tour where he said, okay, I'm going to do a couple laps around the world and that's it. I'm not going to appear in concert anymore. I'm going to be there for my family. I kind of wish that Gordon had, I don't know how else to say it, but read the writing on the wall and said, okay, I've gotten to a certain point in my life. I need to make sure that everybody knows this is my farewell tour. And then I'm going to bring some gems out of the bucket that haven't been played before, like this song. Which is not to say that I would ever have wanted him to go away, but I'm just acknowledging the inevitable that nobody can keep doing this infinitely. You can't do that in entertainment, George Burns notwithstanding. The covers that have been done that we could find, you mentioned Ronnie Hawkins, and then Billy Lee Riley was the other one that I found. And I'm wondering, have you heard either of them? And if you have, do you have any thoughts?
I heard them both yesterday because in our earlier email, you had mentioned those two. I wasn't that familiar with Billy ahead of time, but he did a fine version. And Ronnie Hawkins, who also did Home from the Forest, I like everything Ronnie did. You've probably seen that Ronnie, Gordon, Willie Nelson, and Chris Christopherson, they all do Me and Bobby McGee at Ronnie's house in Ontario. It's like a Mount Rushmore of four very iconic characters.
Yeah, I almost think that Gordon could have replaced one of the Highwaymen back in the, what, late 80s, early 90s, when those four were still together. And now Willie is the only one who's left. But that was a great group. And I think he almost could have just fit right in there. Now, you mentioned Meredith Moon doing this, and clearly she has connections to Gordon. She's his little girl. But why her, and is there anybody else that you think would do justice to this song, either living or dead?
First of all, I'd love to hear Meredith do it because I've heard her on YouTube covering other Lightfoot songs, such as 10 Degrees and Growing Colder. And she puts her own spin on that. She plays a lot of banjo. And of course, she also plays acoustic guitar as well. But I would love to hear her doing it on banjo, and I know she would do a good job, and I know she would put her own spin on it. Meredith would be the one I'd most like to hear. I'd like to hear Gillian Welch do it too. I love the sound of her voice. As far as men, Bill Staines passed away in late 2021, but he would have done that song justice, as would Kate Wolf.
There were only two or three people that I thought of, and one of them I had thought of before we did our recording today, and others I've just thought of. I would have loved to have heard Paul Simon do it, but I mean Paul Simon before Simon and Garfunkel really took off. The young Paul Simon when he's living in England. I think that would have been a lot of fun because I think he could have done justice to this. Phil Oakes maybe could have done a good one on this, although I think he probably would have turned it into some sort of deeper statement because that's the kind of thing Phil did.
Yeah.
And then Holly Near, I think, might also be fun to listen to do this, although I don't know how active Holly is on the concert circuit anymore. She does live right up the road from me in Ukiah.
I believe she's coming to Boston later this year. I was looking at the website at one of the folk clubs in Boston, and I think I saw her name mentioned. You had mentioned Phil Oakes. I love Phil Oakes, but I think it's too bad that he did not write more songs like Changes. I was talking to Tom Paxton years ago, and both agreed that Phil was just a little too cynical for his own good, or maybe Phil was just too knowledgeable for his own good. Sadly, that's why Phil took his life back in 1976. I love the song Changes. I love how Gord did it and how Ian Tyson did it as well. But yeah, Phil also did that great version of The Highwayman. So Phil definitely could have done a really fine job with Rich Man Spiritual. Phil was just so insightful. It's a shame he's no longer around.
Yeah, I think Phil would have had a lot to say about what's happened in the past 30 years. Yeah, Phil Oakes is a real tragic figure. I mean, I love his music, would listen to it on the far side of the moon, but kind of going off the whole idea of being cynical, I don't think he was ever naive enough as a person so that this would have been a credible song for him to sing.
Let's remember, Phil had done the Draft Dodger Rag.
Sure, yeah.
Which also was about hypocrisy, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Sarge, I'm just 18, got a ruptured spleen, and I always carry a purse. You know, someone's got to go over there, but that someone isn't me.
Yeah.
That song has some similarities with Rich Man Spiritual because it's about someone unwilling to make the sacrifice, but hoping others do it for him.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that, as you said, he was so knowledgeable and saw through the political system so clearly, and also had his own thoughts on religion, that I just can't see him. I can hear him singing What's That I Hear Now and Draft Dodger Rag, but somebody who's going to be so naive to think that he can buy his way into heaven, I don't even think Phil believed in heaven. I think I would like to have heard his vocal rendition of it. I just don't know if he would have ever chosen to sing it, I guess is my point here. So, Neil, as we're sort of wrapping up, anything else you wanted to say about Rich Man Spiritual?
Well, it's an undiscovered gem, and I would encourage anyone who listens to this podcast to look it up because it's a meaningful song, and it certainly made an impact on me. Let me give a shout-out to your podcast. Once I started listening to them yesterday, I just couldn't stop, and I'll be listening to more of them. You haven't had a bad one yet, and I hope this one is not the exception.
Oh, no. You're doing great, so I don't need to worry about that, yeah. No. Neil, Cody, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been a true delight to be able to talk about not just this song, but about music and about Gord's music in general. I hope to have you back on the show again soon.
If you don't invite me, I will invite myself.
And thanks for listening, everybody. If you like this well enough to listen to the whole thing, tell somebody about it. Carefree Highway Revisited is on Apple, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your listening matter. I'd like to make a special request for you to visit my Patreon page. I love this show so much, and I want to keep it going, and you're in a position to help. Please head over to www.patreon.com/carefreehighwayrevisited. A dollar or two a month is all I ask. You can reach me, Mike Messner, at teachermike72@gmail.com.
Well, scheduled to join me on my next episode will be my guest Harlow Rio Monroe, and she and I will be discussing Apology from the 1969 Sunday Concert album, and that episode of Carefree Highway Revisited will be coming out in March of 2025. Until then, for Neil Cody, this is Mike Messner reminding you, run for the roses, but don't forget to stop and smell them. We'll see you next time.